Guys, it's almost May, and that means graduations, job interviews, and dressing for work. That's why we love the folks at Liberty Shirt Co. Not only do they make the coziest, warmest, and softest flannels we love to wear, but they have over 400 fabrics for you to design your one-of-a-kind shirt for every occasion, like white shirts for job interviews to the coolest linen for summer clubbing down the shore. And what's really awesome about these guys is that they make every shirt in New Jersey. Head over to libertyshirtco.com and save every time you use the promo code 3PEAT. Hello and welcome back to another 3PEAT podcast episode, season 3, episode 10. I'm your host, Josh Fromwitz, and once again, joined with me are my co-hosts,
Stephen Benazzo
and Alex Castle.
And boys, March is here. March Madness season is right around the corner. I am super excited. I know you boys are too. We got to talk. Our Hartford Hawks are in the America East Championship with a chance to make a tourney run for the first time ever. Steve, control your excitement for a little bit until we talk about it. Then you can let it all out. We've got some NBA news. Blake Griffin has joined the super team. And speaking of super teams, are super teams ruining the league? We'll talk about that in a little bit. And to wrap up the show, this past week, the NFL deadline for franchise tags happened. We'll talk about who got tagged, who didn't. Dak Prescott got his deal. Is he worth it? Much more to come later on. But like we said, the Hartford Hawks are in the America East Championship. They're hosting UMass Lowell. This is what should have been last year when they were playing Vermont in the America East Championship. But exactly a year ago today, COVID outbreak forced them to stop play. And yeah, it's so surreal, except there's no fans. So Stevie, you're jumping for joy right now. You're not even in your seat anymore. So I want to hear what you're feeling right now.
Our boys did it. They took care of Vermont in Vermont, which, like we said last episode, they would have did that last year. Even better, they did it this year. And now we are in the America East Championship for the second year in a row, and we're hosting it for the first time ever. I mean, like you said, no fans, so that sucks. But just the fact that we're even in it again and we're hosting it, I'm super excited. And it's going to be televised on ESPN2 this Saturday at 11 a.m., so definitely tune in for that game. But you got to like what you're seeing from the Hawks team. Between really all credit goes to Coach Gallagher. He's just a phenomenal coach, just a phenomenal person in general. Like I said, last episode, I interviewed him. He was just such a great person to interview, and he really is passionate about what he does in his players, and he's passionate about the neighborhood, and that's why you see them the best 4 years in program history, and now the last 2 years being in the conference championship with a chance to go to March Madness, the NCAA tournament, for the first time in program history. Not the first time in 10 years, 20 years, first time in program history. So this will be huge for this program if we can beat UMass Lowell. But UMass Lowell, though, listen, I got to give them credit. They're playing some really, really, really good basketball. They have a few good guys. That Connor Withers kid at like 9 threes against UMBC. I don't want to like mispronounce this first name. Obi Noel. Their guard, he's a phenomenal player. He's been a phenomenal player his entire career there. They were down to UMBC. And they came back and upset UMBC, the number one seed at UMBC. So, like I said, they're hot right now, which is scary. But, I mean, our Hawks, though, we got some size. Tracy Carter has just been playing phenomenal. And Tracy, he's a great player. John Gallagher said that he was the best defensive player that he's ever coached. So, and he's a veteran. And I know he wants this bad, and so does the rest of the team. So I think it's going to be a great game to watch.
And it's interesting because we see on the sidelines, we talked about it last week, and we talk about it amongst ourselves just every time the Hawks play. Especially this year, it's even more noticeable. The energy that Gallagher has on the sidelines is infectious to his guys. whether they're up by five, up by one, down by 30. It's the same passion and energy. You play from when the ball tips, and you don't stop playing until the final horn sounds. And you see John Gallagher running up and down the sidelines, whether he's in his defensive position or just throwing a fist up to pump his guys up. You got to think, when a coach is doing that and is so passionate and wants the most out of his guys, that that automatically makes us the favorites because there's no fans. And you got to bring your own energy because there are no fans to do that. So obviously we're biased because we go here, but you've got to say that the Hawks are the favorites now. Alex, what's your opinion on that?
First of all, Josh, what you were just bringing up about the lack of fans and how this team has to bring their own energy, I think that's huge. I think that in the COVID era, not having fans, as we've seen, has been huge for these athletes. You know, in the beginning, LeBron talking a lot about the lack of fans. And now you look at this team, you know, these are college kids. So yes, they're obviously they're not professional athletes, but still, being a college athlete, no matter what level you're on, is a big commitment. And I think the fact that during the COVID era that our Hartford Hawks men's basketball team has been able to continuously bring this energy throughout this tournament is huge. And I think that the fact that they got cut from not playing Vermont last season, they got that riding on them, it's going to be full force for this game. So I like, you know, of course, it's a biased opinion, but I like Hartford a lot. I think the fact that Tracy Carter was able to have another year of eligibility was huge. Coach Gallagher, I mean, everyone loves Coach Gallagher. I haven't met one kid on our campus who follows athletics that has said anything bad about him. So I think this is huge.
My last thing, sorry to cut you off, Castle.
No, but no, go ahead.
Even with Coach Gallagher, I follow him on Twitter, and he's just so appreciative and supportive of everyone who supports and is a part of what he calls the neighborhood or the Hartford Hawks basketball program, or even just the university in general. He's always liking tweets and replying to people saying, you know, thank you, you're part of this. Even if they didn't play here, go here, whatever. If you show some type of support to this program, to the school, Coach Gallagher is super appreciative of that. And even on ESPN, though, like a lot of the guys, Scott Van Pelt even tweeted something like that, like, great win after the Vermont game, now run it back in the neighborhood. So that was awesome. And then after one of the shows, Steve Levy, and who was the other? I forgot what other anchor was on there with Steve Levy, but they gave Hartford a little shout out right at the end there, which was nice. So you could see, like, Hartford's not going unnoticed. People are starting to notice and, you know, seeing what Coach Gallagher is doing with this program. And that's why I feel this win is going to, if they win, I'm not going to say like they will win, but if they do win, it will be such a tremendous step for this program, which they've already taken so many during Coach Gallagher's time here. But it would be huge. And it's a really cool matchup because it's the first, neither of these schools have ever made it to the NCAA tournament. So whether UMass Lowell wins or Hartford wins, it'll be, both schools will be going to the Big Dance for the first time ever. So I think there's a lot of big implications for this game, which will make it that much more exciting and that much more entertaining to watch.
It's just a shame, though, that this game is in Hartford. And you said either team is the first time that they have a chance to make the March Madness appearance. So one team will end up cutting the nets down with no fans, which it sucks. But I think they'll be grateful regardless, and they won't see it as a big defeat. I think they'll see it as they had to overcome so much and the challenges that came with the America East schedule as well as the NCAA schedule this year in general. So kudos to whoever ends up representing the America East in March Madness. And thank God it's not Vermont again.
Oh, dude. Listen, all respect to Vermont. They, you know, they're a top-tier program, top-tier mid-major. And John Beck, their coach, has done tremendous things there. But obviously, as a student at UHeart, and it's good to see. Obviously, it's awesome to see our school in it, but it's good to see other teams in it. Just so it's so you change it up a little bit. I hate when you got to respect the dynasties, but after a little while, you do get tired of them. So I'm glad that they're not going to be in it.
Exactly, and we're excited to see it all play out Saturday, 11 a.m. ESPN2. But you mentioned dynasties. They end at some point, whether it's a small market school or a big market school like Duke. They are not going to be in March Madness this year. They finished with a record like right around 500. Their only shot at making the tournament this year was to win out and win the ACC tourney, but because someone tested positive on their team, they had to forfeit all their games. So, sorry, Duke, you will not be seeing March Madness this year. But I think it's refreshing for fans seeing, like you said, Steve, seeing different teams. Gonzaga is a possible one seed. Illinois is a top seed. It's cool to see those teams who typically will be in it, but not that high. So it's a nice change of scenery. UNC will be very, very low in the tournament. Well, I guess very high because whatever. So it'll be cool. No Duke. I mean, sucks to be a Duke fan, but I'm excited.
It's got to be shocking for a lot of these college basketball insiders and even just college basketball fans in general. When you think of college basketball, you think of Duke, UNC, Kentucky, and I don't even know if Kentucky, if they lose in the tournament, if they'll even make it because their record wasn't good. And then, like you just said, Duke is out. So it is crazy. But you kind of see now, yes, you want these top players, but sometimes that doesn't pay off. You need – because I'm not – because obviously Coach K is a tremendous coach. He's a phenomenal coach. He's a Hall of Fame coach. It's not him. But sometimes just because they have more stars or a higher rating doesn't mean that it's equivalent to wins. You got to get players that fit your scheme, that are good leaders, that actually want to – not that these kids don't want to win, but that actually want to win. Josh, you have a point really quickly?
I just wanted to add on to exactly what you're saying, and I'm sure you're about to bring this up. Jalen Johnson – a five-star recruit, a freshman who came into Duke, exactly fits the mold of what you were saying and describing. He's a projected top 15 pick in the NBA draft this year because he was going to be a one-and-done type guy, but he didn't fit the system and the scheme of Duke. And it seems like his stock, because he dropped out and declared for the draft, his stock is going down because of it. And he didn't have the season that he expected. So, yeah, I mean, just because you have the best guys doesn't mean you have the best team. Hartford's a great example. They don't have any five stars. Their four-star recruit is Moses Flowers, who was out for the year in the beginning. So, yeah, it's all about the coach and the system and the players buying into the system. And that's why you see guys like teams like Gonzaga undefeated because, yeah, they have talent, but they have guys who fit the system.
And what I'm starting to notice more, in the last true, like, real group of players that wanted to be there to, like, Zion, like, I know he left after that 1 year, which, if you were Zion, obviously you would, because he was pretty much unanimously the number one overall pick, and then he ended up being the number one overall pick, but he loved Duke. He loved that brotherhood. And that's why him, RJ, and Cam Reddish played so well together. A lot of these guys now, and that's why you see a lot of them going into the G League, because they don't really care about playing college basketball and winning in college basketball. They want to just make it to the pros. They just want to get paid and play professional basketball. But that's why I love Illinois, because Illinois has shown that they actually want to win, and especially their best player, Io. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this correctly or as best as I could, but Io Desunmu. That's probably as close I'm going to get. I apologize, but he really loves what that program is. He's a native of Chicago, so the University of Illinois. That's the school he plays for. So it means a lot to him. It's not just about making to the next level, which obviously he wants to and he will, but just what it means to be part of that program and to win and win with that program and turn that program around and make sure he leaves it heading in the right direction. That's what matters to him. And that's why you see Illinois the top team in the Big Ten and a top team in all of college basketball. So I think we're starting to realize more and more that these kids that are such high recruits aren't necessarily winners. They are great they're very athletic, they're good, great basketball players that will make it to the NBA, but doesn't necessarily mean that they're winners or that they know what it means to be part of a team. And I'm not trying to diss anyone or saying that these kids, like, they're selfish. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it seems like the feel and the what it means to be part of a program is not there as much as it used to be.
Agreed. And yeah, it'll look different this year. Obviously, no Duke, like we keep saying. And we'll see how it all plays out. Selection Sunday is this coming Sunday. And it'll be time to fill out our brackets coming this week. So come next week.
We didn't fill out our brackets last year either. So
it'll feel nice. It'll feel good for the first time in 2 years to fill out a bracket. So I'm sure we'll be talking about that next week. Looking forward to the start of the games. But yeah, moving from collegiate hoops to the pro hoops. Castle, you're a Knicks fan. The Nets keep making moves. I want to know what you're feeling right now as a basketball fan and as a Knicks fan. Could either be the same or different. The Nets acquired Blake Griffin over the All-Star weekend break. Yes, he's not the same Lob City LA Clippers Blake Griffin. He's very injury prone. His stats are down. Instead of averaging 20 points, he's averaging 12 this year. So is this a good move for the Nets? Obviously, I'm a little biased, so I won't answer right now. But I want to hear your thoughts. Is this the right move for the Nets? Does it make them even more so a super team? Does it ruin the league? What are your thoughts?
So let me start off as a perspective from a Knicks fan. It's like if the Jets were to continuously acquire and build a huge team. You know, they're the other New York team. Yeah, it sucks, you know? I mean, the Knicks, listen, we've got our guys. Obviously, we're not at the same level as the Nets, but, I mean, it'll definitely make it tougher for us through the remainder of the season. You know, hopefully we're a high enough seed where we don't have to face them in the first round. So that's how I see it with that. In terms of a basketball fan, I kind of like the move, and here's why. I think Brooklyn needs as much chemistry as they can, because you have all of these high talent, high caliber guys on the team. And so far it's been working great. But I think if you continuously add guys who have played together and who have experienced different coaching staffs together, I think it brings something. You know, Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, they played with each other in a very young part of their career with the Clippers. And it was Lob City. It was an exciting time. And we see that they're excited to play together again. So, like you said, Josh, Griffin is not the player that he used to be. I think you're oblivious as a fan if you don't see that. But he's still someone that I think can help out the Nets. I see Griffin more helping from a defensive point because, let's be honest here, the Nets are the highest scoring team in the league. They weren't getting Blake Griffin for his ability to shoot the ball. They were getting him for another big body in the paint. They're getting him to crash the boards. And I think they needed that help. I think when they lost Jared Allen, that was a piece that they were missing. So I think getting Griffin was good. another interesting way that I see it as they're getting all these guys to beat one man, Mr. LeBron James. So it's very interesting. You know, they keep adding all these guys. Is Brooklyn fearing that they didn't have enough firepower to handle LeBron in the finals, and that's why they had to add Griffin? But overall, I think it was a good move. It'll be interesting to see how he plays, but I mean, it's just crazy to see how the trend of super teams has just continued to evolve over the years in the league.
We'll talk about that in a little bit, because that's an interesting point that you bring up, and it sparks my interest too. But I thought you were going to say that one man that the Nets fear is Alex Caruso, not LeBron. But that's a different subject.
Well, everyone fears the White Mamba. That's just a given.
Fair enough. But I think for the Nets, because you look at the Eastern Conference, getting a guy like Blake Griffin, you got to go through Giannis, Embiid. The Knicks have Randall, even. The Magic have Vucevic. The Pacers have Sabonis. Out West, there's Anthony Davis. There's Jokic.
So why?
Kawhi is a big also. There's all these teams that have bigs. Yes, the Nets have KD, but he's not the traditional center. He's a four or a three. So a guy like Blake Griffin who can play the four and the five is key. DeAndre Jordan is not what he once was. We all know that. So adding another piece helps that bench and the depth. So for what we got him, it was a great price. He was on the Pistons for 30 mil plus a year. He was able to buy out and sign with the Nets for 1 mil for a year, which is a great contract for a guy who, if he can still produce something, it's better than nothing, in my opinion. And if it doesn't pay out, then we just cut him. Stevie, what are your thoughts on this move?
Listen, in terms for the Nets, it's a great move, but I don't like the move for the league. I just, and this kind of goes with the super team things, that once you start to see a super team formed, then it's only about that team and no other team matters. And I just think that's what just takes the competitiveness out of the league and the sport. And like, I know, as like, you want to be a champion, you want to win the championship, you want to be the top team in the league, you want to be the last team standing at the end of the season. But that's why I love a guy like Damian Lillard, because he hasn't, in Portland, he's made it to the playoffs. He's pretty much carried the Trailblazers every year they've been in the playoffs. And half the time, he's advanced into the next round by hitting a buzzer beater from deep three, which is ironic and funny, but it's also awesome. But every year, this year, I mean, first, he lost his big guy, his star, and LaMarcus Aldridge when LaMarcus Aldridge signed with the Spurs. He didn't really complain. And then McCollum became his next guy. And then McCollum has been injured. He doesn't really voice anything. And he just keeps playing and winning and tries to win for the Trailblazers because that's a team he's on. He's not focused on joining another team to help them win more when they're already winning. So I just think that, and I know the NBA is very, I mean, there's been super teams now for even longer than we've been alive. You can see the Bulls and, you know, all those Lakers and Celtics teams and all these teams. I get it. Especially basketball, since there's a smaller number of people on a court and on a team. You're bound to have more stars playing together. But I just, and I know Blake Griffin is not the big star he once was, but it, and then if I've seen reports that Andre Drummond can join the Nets, like, it's just getting to a point where it's, you still want to be competitive. And I know the Nets want to win and they're making really good moves. And I know like the NBA could be making a lot of money off this, but I just, then it takes away competitive, because then a team like the 8 seed, so whether it's like the Magic or Pacers or even my Bulls, we're just not going to stand a chance. So we can beat some of these other lower tier teams and it's competitive, like with the Hornets, the Pacers, I'm trying to think of other Eastern teams, or even out West, you know, like say the Mavericks and the, I'm blanking, but you get my point. That's why I love college basketball, because we see that, like, it doesn't really matter if you're a top team, you can always lose. And it just, in the NBA, it seems like usually there's just all these super teams and they're just bound to win. So we're bound to see the Lakers again. And we're now in the East, it's probably going to be the Nets or the Sixers. And it'll probably be like that for a while until LeBron retires or Anthony Davis maybe goes somewhere else, or that now like four powerhouse in Brooklyn between Harden, Kyrie, KD, and now Blake Griffin get split up. You know what I'm saying? So like, we're going to see these teams just stay. And like, that was what it was with the Warriors until KD finally left. And unfortunately Klay has had many injuries. So I don't know. I just don't think it's a good look for the league, and it just takes away from the competitiveness of the league.
Yeah, I mean, I'm biased here again because I'm a Nets fan, and it's not like the moves the Nets have made were bad moves in any sense. Like, 2 years ago in free agency, they were able to sign Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in free agency. Great. Kevin Durant had to sit out all last year because of injury, and Kyrie Irving was injured. Okay, fast forward to this year. They're both healthy. And James Harden is frustrated in Houston. So we're able to land Harden because he wanted to play alongside Durant and Kyrie. And that immediately makes the Nets a favorite. And now Blake Griffin is bought out in Detroit. And it's actually interesting. It was not DeAndre Jordan, his former teammate, who reached out to him. It was Kevin Durant who reached out to him to want to play with him. So I found that very interesting when I saw that. But going back 8, 10, whatever, however long it was, when Chris Paul was a free agent and he tried – or I think it was a trade, actually. When he was originally – when he went to the Clippers, he was originally supposed to go to the Lakers. But that got vetoed because the league thought it would have been too unfair with him and Kobe Bryant on the same team. So he ended up on the Clippers. So I find it interesting how we went from that to now, where you see teams like the Nets, the Lakers now, Philly even could be considered one. So do I think the super teams have ruined the league a bit? Yes. But as a Nets fan, I can't complain, because the moves we're making are smart moves that any GM would make. And it just so happens that from what I've dealt with as a Nets fan, if you were to ask me 5 years ago that we'd be in first place right now competing and as a top favorite for the league, I would have said you were crazy. So as a Nets fan, I'm enjoying it, but I get the frustration and anger for everyone else.
And like, it's good to see a team like the Nets relevant again and really good and competitive and like, on top. I mean, you think like back to like the Jason Kidd and Kenyon Martin, Richard Jefferson days, or even just not a few, but like when they first moved to Brooklyn with Deron Williams and Joe Johnson and that crew. You want teams like that, or a Castle, like, I want your Knicks to be good again, which they are now this year, but I want them to get like a star, and I want them to be relevant. And I mean, because obviously we weren't alive for the Patrick Ewing era, which I'm sure was a lot of fun. And leading back to, you know, almost 10 years ago, 2012, 2013, with Melo leading the charge in New York and the excitement. And I mean, I think the Knicks were what, like the 2 seed that year?
Second or third seed, I believe, yeah.
So that was, you know, that was good to see. Or even my Bulls, like, they haven't won since Jordan and Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman, but they were still back to D Rose, Noah, Luol Deng. Like, that was fun. So I want to see more teams like that, but I also want to see just every other team competitive. So that's why, like, I just don't like the super teams, because then you just pretty much get those teams for many years until they finally split apart, which they will. It's pretty, you know, it's inevitable, but for that time being, it gets back to like that whole dynasty thing, and you got to respect it. But sometimes some dynasties are just naturally occurring, and then some are a little like, not artificial, but they get a little artificial when guys are like, you know what? Like, for the Nets, for example, they had the money and they were appealing to Kyrie and KD. They want to play together. All right. But then a guy like James Harden saying, it's not working out in Houston. I don't want to play here anymore. Trade me to the Nets, Sixers, who have Embiid and Simmons and Tobias. Yeah, so pretty much he was going to...
All would have been a big three with Harden, and it would have been an immediate super team.
Exactly.
And if you went to Philly, I'd be feeling the same anger as you guys right now, because I do agree, they ruined the league in to some aspect, and it's too predictable. Like, it's obvious that, assuming they win, the finals should be Nets-Lakers or Philly-Lakers or Clippers-Philly. Maybe you could throw the Bucks in the mix, maybe. But I get what you're saying, and don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not disagreeing at all. My only thing is, just because I'm biased, like, the Harden, yes, that was very artificial. But any GM would make that move.
Oh, totally. And I'm not trying to, like I said, I know players want to win and stuff like that too. I get that. But at the same time, I get, if you, and like you said, like, and we, you know, talked about this with what Draymond Green said, like with that standard and stuff like that. There's a difference between wanting out and voicing opinion with that, and then just wanting to go to a team that's already stacked and like, just going there would just really put them over the top. Like, they were already, like, maybe considered over the top, and then you just are just, like, it's, a little too much. So, that's what I'm saying. Obviously, I'm still going to watch the NBA. Obviously, I'm still going to root for my team and, you know, watch these good teams play. But at the same time, it just – I like to see some – teams that haven't been relevant again, or like those lower seeds, really be competitive with some of these top teams. And I just don't feel like that's going to happen.
I think the reason for that, Steve, and this is kind of backtracking from Josh's point about Chris Paul with the Lakers. It's interesting because when we saw the first real super team created, it was LeBron, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade. And it was Miami. And now you got to think about that for a second. How come that didn't get vetoed, but the other trade did? And the way that I see it is, it's money. It's all about money, unfortunately, at the end of the day. I think the NBA saw that as an opportunity to rake in so much money for the city of Miami and themselves that they just went with it. And now we have this trend. And like you said, it's very unfortunate that there are teams like the Knicks and the Pacers and the Magic who are struggling to compete with these teams. And again, look, you can't blame the Nets organization for what they did. At the end of the day, they were in a position where they were all about now, and that's why they went after Harden. But I hope in the future that we do see the league a little more spread out. As much as it, as fun as it is to watch these super teams, like, listen, you can't deny the Nets are entertaining. It's great. It's a great thing to watch. But it's also fun to see these underdogs come up and compete. And that's what I think sports is really about at the end of the day, is seeing the underdog grind and compete and essentially beat the money man. So it'll be interesting to see where this is taken with the league. I definitely think, though, that if the Knicks want to continue to have their fan base and want to continue to be, you know, known as New York's team, which me and Josh can debate about that all day, that there's a time and a place for that. But at the end of the day, if they want to compete and be the other team in the Big Apple, they need to start looking at what other teams are doing. It's a crappy thing to say, but I think building a super team is how you make your mark in this century and in this league today.
So my next point, I just want to counter what you just said, Alex, and then I'll let Steve jump in after. Sorry, Stevie, I know you got a lot to say here.
Nah, listen, I'm all good.
So do you think that it's possible to break up super teams, or you think the only way is to compete with them and build your own super teams, because I don't think super teams will ever go away. I think if you want to be relevant, you kind of have to compete with your own super team. So I want to hear what you think, Alex, and Steve after.
I'm sorry, Josh. You broke up a little bit. Say that again.
So I was saying that, do you think that super teams are here to stay, or is it possible to break them up? Like for the Knicks, for example, in order to stay relevant as New York's team, in quotes, do you think they should build their own super team, or is it possible to break up the super teams altogether?
I think it's tough. I think, you know, going back to what I was saying, I think that there is an aspect of this league today where you need to have a super team built or some sort of super team built. But on the other hand, sure, you can break up these teams, these super teams. There are a bunch of different scenarios that can happen. One of the guys can get offered a contract. There can be an issue with management. Anything can happen. I think that if super teams were broken up, it would be interesting to see how the league reacts. You know, maybe you won't see teams going for whoever they can get. Maybe they'll be a little more selective with who they go with, because just going back to this Nets thing again, you know, I don't know what Andre Drummond's deal is at the moment, but he, in my opinion, is someone that can definitely help out the Nets a lot more than Blake Griffin. But I don't know what the Nets salary cap is like, what his contract is like. So they just went for Blake Griffin. And I feel like they went a little more for the name than the skill because of where he is in his career. Like, oh, now we got Blake Griffin, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant. And I think that also has to do with a little bit of the marketing aspect. Like, look who we have on our starting team. Look who we have on our bench. Come support us. So to answer your question, I think anything can happen with these super teams. But at the end of the day, I do think that it will become more of a trend because more and more organizations are going to figure out ways to attract these guys. And I think these smaller market teams are going to have a tough time. Like, I look at a team like Indiana. Yeah, they got some great guys, but I don't see what the possible attraction could be for a guy of Harden's caliber, Donovan Mitchell's caliber. So I think these big markets are gonna be the bigger fish when it comes to these super teams.
So then let me use another team as an example, but then I'll throw this to Steve. I'll let you answer it. Utah is a perfect example of a small market team that could be attractive because you mentioned a Donovan Mitchell type. Rudy Gobert is a top center. They have Mike Conley. No, I don't consider them a super team, and I don't think you guys do as well. Yeah, you're both shaking your heads no. But is that attractive for a top guy? Let's hear your thoughts, Stevie, as you're saying no.
Listen, so I'm going to go no because it's that small market. One, you know, they don't have the funds that teams in New York, so the Nets or the Knicks, or even Chicago, or even L.A. has. They just don't because they're a small – I mean, Utah's just not a big market for sports, and especially a small city in Utah. Not that where they play is a small city, but it's just not a big market. It's a very small market, and these big-time players, they don't want to go to these small markets because they want to expand their career, their brand. A lot of times these players are not just – playing, you know, like they're playing obviously, but they have, you know, their hand in a lot of different things, endorsements or companies or whatever. So they want to expand not only for their basketball career, but also just their name and their entire, what they stand for and what they, you know, whatever. So by going to a small market like Utah is not really going to do that, while LA, New York, Boston, Chicago will. And then you have those, like, you know, pretty big markets that not maybe not of that caliber, like Miami or Houston, or I guess maybe Golden State. But you know, like Sacramento, Utah, even, yeah, like Indiana, they're not going to. And then I want to kind of go and talk about breaking up the super teams. And I feel like it intertwines. I feel like once a super team breaks up, another one forms. So you saw that with Golden State. Golden State broke up, and then Brooklyn formed. So I feel like it's always going to be like that. So after a while, like Kessel said, you know, it is possible to break one up, and it will. You know, with Golden State, we saw they weren't going to be able to afford Steph, Clay, KD on all max contracts, and Draymond. So KD got injured, and then he was having kind of problems with some of the guys, and he just felt it was time to move on. So injuries and obviously contracts will break it up. But then we saw Brooklyn, obviously. Kyrie left Boston, and kind of that, not super team, but that, you know, big three before Kemba went there. So I think it's always going to be like one will break up and then one will always kind of form again, because there's only so many like of those stars to go around. And once they're there for a little while, like they're not going anywhere unless they want out or they choose to leave. But for the most part, they're going to stay there. So it's tough to kind of like, because, you know, if everyone could do it, then everyone would have a super team, but that's just not how it works. So I think in order to get a super team, one has to break up. And I think the best example to use is the Warriors to then the Nets.
Just piggybacking off of that, Steve, you know, having a super team obviously is great. Gives you the better odds of championship, like we said. It can bring a lot more support to your team. But what I've noticed is the aftermath, that could really damage a team. I mean, you look at Golden State this season, aside from Steph Curry and maybe Wiseman, it seems like they got a hangover from this breakup. I mean, Golden State is definitely not talked about as much. Yeah, they have the new arena, which is great, but when they were at the top of their game, they were one of the biggest stories in sports. So yes, as much as a super team is great and it's a great thing to watch, the damage after is, I think, what these teams got to think about, because Kevin Durant leaves, Klay Thompson gets these bad injuries, Draymond Green is not playing to the level that he did when Golden State was in their prime. They went from the top to the bottom. So that's something that these teams got to think about. Super teams are great, but I think the teams that are more spread out and have depth, like the Nets before they made the trades, those are the teams that you got to really focus on.
And that Nets team before they made the trades was still fun. I missed D'Lo as a Net, and Dinwiddie when healthy.
Ooh. Dinwiddie when healthy, Prince, like that bench was LeVert. That that bench was just great.
Prince, ugh, not a fan. But that's a good take. I agree with both of your points. Like I keep saying, though, I am biased, but I get where you're coming from, and I would have had the same opinion if the cards didn't come and fall in my favor. But transitioning to football, everyone's favorite kid game of tag occurred this past week. Franchise tags occurred. Thanks for the thumbs up, Stevie. I appreciate that. we saw a bunch of guys like the Giants, your Giants Castle, they tagged Leonard Williams. The Super Bowl champs, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they franchise tagged Chris Godwin. Those are among some of the big names. Guys like Juju Smith, Kenny Galladay were not franchise tagged, which means they're eligible to go to free agency now and test out their market. So, Stevie, you're thrilled for now that Allen Robinson was franchise tagged. So, are you more optimistic that he'll sign a longer-term deal, or are you still a bit hesitant now?
I'm obviously Allen Robinson, because people can be like, well, now he definitely wants out because he doesn't want to play under the tag, and he's like, and he has like tweets since being tagged, like franchise tag sucks, you know, blah, blah, they should do away with it. Obviously, he's not that happy with it. But the Bears, like, you could not just not tag him. You needed to have him under control because that gives you more time to work out a deal with him or even just a tag and trade so you don't just lose him for nothing. So I am a little more optimistic that, like, all right, now we have until July, which is a deadline for contract extensions or for some sort of deadline to get a deal done. Or it gives us time to maybe work out a trade. But listen, like, the Bears needed to do this, but I think they're waiting until they figure out the quarterback position. Because as much as I want Allen Robinson to get paid, you know, the Bears are not one of those teams that have money just coming, you know, from all different places. Like, they're kind of, they're strapped. They're one of the teams strapped for cash and they can, you know, in the salary cap numbers. So I think they want to figure out the quarterback position, especially if they get a guy like Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, which, you know, people could say that's highly unlikely, but you just don't know. So you got to figure out, cause that's a position that's been haunting the Bears for pretty much their entire existence. So, or since Sid Luckman, but that was in the early 40s, 30s. So, like, it's been a while. So I think they want to figure that out. Once they get figure that out, then you can re-sign A-Rob. Listen, I would pretty much hand A-Rob the check and be like, listen, this is what you want, then we'll give you it because we see he is a top receiver in this game. So I don't think he should just be, like, so mad and now he just wants out. I think he's got to understand, like, listen, the Bears were going to tag you regardless just so they didn't lose you. But now the Bears, though, have to be like, all right, we can't just let him go. We got to keep him on this team for a long time, so let's work out a deal with him. But like I said, I think they're waiting to maybe figure out the quarterback position before they start handing all this money out to him. So that's where I think it could be at. Obviously, I'm no insider. I'm not. I'm just reading things or just judging off my own thoughts and beliefs. So we'll have to see what happens. But I am glad that at least Allen Robinson's locked up for another year with us, whether he likes it or not.
And another one I just mentioned was Leonard Williams of the Giants. I'm sure, Castle, you're pumped about that because when he went from the Jets to the Giants, just switching locker rooms in MetLife, it proved to be a factor for him and his confidence. And he broke out this year. So what are your thoughts on the Giants tagging him?
Needed to be done. Needed to be done. Very happy. $19.4 million to franchise tag him is definitely not a small chunk of change. But you look at what he did and how many different quarterbacks he disrupted, how many sacks he got, how many quarterback hits he got. He's a defense. The big cat is who we needed, and franchise tagging him is great. I was also happy with the Giants releasing lineman Kevin Zeitler. It's a little disappointing, I guess, in a way, because, you know, he's been with the team for a couple seasons now, but he's getting up there in age. And it to me, it looks like we're going for a younger line, which I think will be great. Barkley coming back will take some pressure off of Danny Dimes, which will be good. So, yeah, I'm happy with it. I hope we can get Kenny Golladay. He would be great to get. He's a receiver that I feel would almost complete the offense. After him, if we could draft Pitts, then we'll be set. But yes, I'm definitely happy with this move. One more thing the Giants need to do is cut Solder. Very unfortunate that he didn't play last season with some family issues, but he just wasn't the same guy that was blocking for Brady at the end of the day. And I don't see the Giants looking to restructure his contract. So far, Gettleman's doing pretty good this offseason. I'm happy with him at the moment, but as you guys know, my feelings of Gettleman are subject to change at any time.
And Castle, same with me and Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. So we'll have to, you know, it's funny, it's just crazy, and even big news today: the Chiefs releasing Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher, both are starting left tackles. Like, and kind of like I was saying last episode how Diana Russini was saying it's going to be a massacre of just roster change. It seems like, the Chiefs, both their starting tackles, and we saw what injured O-line did in the Super Bowl. Not good for Mahomes, so I don't know what he's thinking with that. So, and then, from it's like you were saying, Galladay not getting tagged, Juju not getting tagged. Like, we can see a lot of change happening in the next couple of days and weeks. So, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah. It's March for a reason, not just for basketball, because madness is upon us. We'll keep you guys updated about that. But one thing that is for sure, one person that's not going anywhere is Dak Prescott. He got paid. Whether you agree with it or not, you like his contract or not, Dallas paid him. He got the money that he's been waiting for 4 or 5 years now. It's absurd, for sure. I don't have the exact contract up on me. Do you have it, Steve, by any chance?
It's a 4-year, $160 million contract with $126 million guaranteed. I believe he'll be earning $75 million in the first year.
Absurd. Absolutely absurd. I mean, listen, I'm happy with it as a Giants fan because I don't think Prescott's their solution. But for him to be getting paid that much money, I mean, it absurd is the word that I'm going to keep using.
I like the move for them because I think Dak is very underrated. And I know Castle, like, being a Giants fan, you may not agree, but I do think he's a top quarterback in this league. And we see it's hard for a lot of teams to find that guy. You know, there's so many teams looking for quarterbacks this year. And so I think the Dak is a guy like that, that the Cowboys, granted, the Cowboys have a lot more problems that they need to figure out before they really contend for anything. But keeping Dak is a step in that direction. And plus, Dak is more than deserving of it. He was a fourth-round draft pick in 2016. He's exceeded all these expectations. And the second thing, too, is what Dak has gone through. I mean, losing his mother to cancer, I think it was like 7 years ago or something like that, and losing to his brother a year ago to suicide, and then having that awful ankle injury ending his season. Like, Dak's been through a lot. So for him to finally be rewarded with this, and not – it's not like he, like – he earned it, and he deserved it, and I think it was time that he – that they finally got it done. So I think it was good. I mean, it is a lot of money. You can argue that maybe – he deserved a big contract, but not to that extent. I can, you know, that's where I can maybe start agreeing. But listen, if you feel that he is your franchise guy, then you got to pay him like the franchise guy. And like I said, teams, not a lot of teams have a franchise quarterback that they're like, you're going to lead us for a long time. Only very small teams, small number of teams. So Cowboys feel like they have one in Dak. He's proven he's a top quarterback in the league, and he got paid like one.
So now the Cowboys, they got their quarterback, great. But last year their problem was defense, and they got to figure out their defense. But now because they paid Dak all that money, they're going to have to restructure contracts, figure out what they're going to do. Because they also have guys like DeMarcus Lawrence. So shout out David Kanter on getting that contract done. Zeke Elliott, Amari Cooper, all on massive max deal contracts. I've been seeing rumors that the Cowboys could try to move, whether it's Cooper or Ezekiel Elliott, because those contracts are just absurd. But there goes another weapon for Dak. So we'll see how that all plays out. I'm sure Castle is a Giant fan. You're excited to see Big Cat with his 19.5 mil franchise tag sacking Dak twice a year.
Absolutely. And just going back off of what Steve was saying, listen, the guy has been through a lot, and I absolutely respect him for the way that he's handled himself. I just, the one issue, and he does deserve money. He does deserve a contract. That I'm all for. It's just the amount of money, because like Josh said, their defense it is not good. And if he's going to be your franchise guy, okay, great. But you also have to think about the other side of the ball. And now that there's this risk of moving one of his weapons to save some money, that's where I see the contract taking a back step. But overall, I'm happy for Dak. It is deserved. it's just the amount of money that they put into it is where I'm happy as a Giants fan, because that could haunt them down the road.
Agreed. And like Steve said, it's madness. We'll keep following it as transpires. But that'll wrap up this week's episode of the 3P Podcast. Keep checking out our social media. Matt Angler is doing a great job posting on Instagram daily. A lot of content. So at 3P Podcast is our handle. So give that a follow if you haven't already. Shout out Wild Chat Sports for being a great partner. And thank you for tuning in. Stay tuned for more episodes.